Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, October 10th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gaumont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi. Nice to be here.
I'm glad to have you with us. Also with me today, from my own time zone for a change, Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me. Fun to be here.
Glad to have you with me. And we're going to start. If I had a bell, like John has a bell, I would ring it right now to let you all know that round one is beginning. And round the first round of TDO today is John and Dave talking about 8 gigabytes. Go.
Oh, yeah. So on Mac Geek Gab this week, we had this conversation, and it actually wound up being the titular conversation. In that I said that 8 is enough. And really the context of that is in terms of the amount of RAM that someone needs in a Mac, specifically a laptop, but not necessarily. It was just in the construct of talking about laptops. That someone needs as a bare minimum. And the good news is that that is actually the minimum that Apple ships these machines with. And I have found experientially, in fact, the machine that I am on right now is a loaner MacBook Pro low end with the quad core i5 from Apple that I've wanted to test and compare to what the, you know, what it's like versus a MacBook Air. And I have 16 in the Air and 8 in this, and there's no issue. There's no difference, really, between having 16 in that and 8 in this in terms of everything I do. And I do, I would say, a little bit more than the average user, probably. I'm running extra. Well, I mean, it is my travel machine. It is the machine that I use on the couch. It's not the machine that I use at my desk, you know, all day, every day.
Right.
But I don't know that I run that many less extra apps. You know, yes, right. I have iTunes and music now on this machine because it's running Catalina and Mail and Safari. But I also run Slack, which is a known to be memory hog. I run BusyCal, which is not known to be a memory hog. In fact, it's actually pretty good.
Yep.
And FileMaker. And then there's usually another browser running like Chrome or Firefox or sometimes both. And, you know, so like the apps that I'm running here are basically the apps that I would run on my machine where I went overboard and have 40 gigs of RAM in the office. And it like
hashtag long story.
I accept that I went overboard there. It was fine, but it cost like $80. So it was no big deal. But, 8 really is enough from what I've found. And, you know, I say this as someone who a year ago ish, when buying my MacBook Air, bought it with 16 because I was afraid of whether or not 8 was enough.
Because now, we've been bitten by this in the past.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. Is Apple putting less memory on the Macs than really ought to be there for growth purposes in order to panic the user into thinking about a growth cycle and getting a little bit of extra cash out of them at expensive Apple memory prices at the onset? Or are they making a statement that, you know, we think 8 is fully sufficient for macOS?
I think they've made the statement explicitly that they think 8 is fully sufficient for macOS. And I agree.
And that statement
them.
Is the bare minimum machine comes with 8.
You cannot get a Mac today with less than 8 that I can think of. In fact, I just don't think it's part of the deal. You know, 4 is not enough, right? I learned that really, really quickly running.
We all learned that in different ways.
High Sierra-ish, maybe Sierra, you know, it was like, whoa, this is what just happened to my computer.
Yes.
But it turns out 8 is enough and 16 is you know, is also plenty. I mean, like, there are scenarios where someone would need more than 8. Yes, absolutely. But those
certainly
would be
but
probably
like
not
I would
the people
posit
that are buying the low-end laptops.
I would put forth the theory that Dave, you are recording this podcast with me on the travel machine that you're referring to, and that means that in some ways you are probably doing more with your travel machine than lots of people. When we talked about this yesterday, I said,
correct,
Dave's not people, Dave is Dave. So
right.
For people,
that's fair.
This is probably going to be a really solid machine. And part of that is going forward. I think, John, to your point, part of where that's coming from is We've seen this before, but it used to be that, you know, if you bought a machine with, 256 mega RAM, which I did once, I've been at this a long time, and it turned out not to be enough, you could pop that sucker open and put more in it and call it good.
I had an Apple II with 4K RAM.
Well, I used one. It wasn't mine, but I did get to use one. We won't talk about how old either of us was when that was happening, but like a machine that I bought myself, I upgraded the RAM in, and I did that for years. And so, like, for me, that was part of what made it possible to be a person who paid a little more and got an Apple computer, was that I knew that I was going to get a bunch more life out of it, because at some point I could swap out the RAM if I wanted to, and I could swap out the hard drive, and that made it a little easier to extend the life. So
I used to do that with my Power Mac 8500. That was a machine that I continuously upgraded with.
That was a beautiful machine.
My hands dirty, cracking the box. Well, it wasn't quite as easy to open as the blue and white G3.
Oh, the sawtooth.
Which was glorious, because there was a little loop handle you could open
up
the side.
You just pop the little handle up and it all flops open. Oh, yeah.
Power Mac 8500 was metal, and it was a little quirky to get open.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we all used to do that, and we enjoyed upgrading our machines.
Yes, I still have what I refer to as the fun set of screwdrivers, because that's the one you can open everything interesting with.
And Brian talks lovingly about his 5K iMac about the iMac Pro that's so difficult to upgrade.
With the memory door, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's a product of our culture, our personal culture is what we grew up with.
This has been Throwback Thursday with John and Kelly.
Unix workstations and supercomputers. And I have the mentality that you should get as much memory as you can afford, and glory in the fact that you're never going to have to worry about, running out of memory.
Well, that's just it, though. But it's not just memory that's not upgradable in these machines, mm-hmm. and laptops. It's everything, right? I mean,
Apple knows that people don't do it anymore. People don't want to get their hands dirty. They don't have the time and the experience and the skill to crack open a machine.
It's simply not crack open a way that it used to be either. And then folks that iFixit and OWC have kits that you can upgrade the SSD some Mac laptops.
Do that. Only you and I do that, Dave.
And I don't the thing is the machines are built to be, I don't mean to say disposable, but
static.
There's right. The hardware is just what you're going to live with, which is why it's so important to make this decision when you're buying it, because you can't get back. Right? But the same thing, saying that that's how it is. Does it make sense to spend the extra $200 on RAM today? More sense to put that $200 in your pocket, or maybe buy a share.
It's like Apple Care. It's peace of mind.
Yes. And there's nothing wrong with spending that money for peace of mind.
Right.
I just wanted to share the advice and the lesson that I learned, that if you don't want to, or simply can't afford to spend $100 now, you're still going to be okay. Like, you won't miss it.
What does Activity Monitor say about the memory you're using out of your 8 gigabyte right now?
That is a good question.
16, I've got 16 in my Mac Pro, and I'm using 11. So 8 wouldn't work.
Okay.
But maybe you're using 6 out of your 8.
That's not how memory on Mac OS works. This is the problem. Is if you look at how John, you bring up a great point. If I look on my 40 gig Mac, it's going to say I'm using 33 gigs of RAM. But so much of that are things that don't fit to be in RAM, right? They're just there because why wouldn't they be? We didn't need the RAM for anything.
We're not working as hard to swap because we don't need the room.
Right. And Ellie, you brought up swap. There's no with swapping for this type of stuff anymore, because we're all on SSDs. It's not like we're swapping out drives like we used to.
So, Dave, it sounds like what you're saying and you guys are going to have to go with me on this slight diversion for a moment. What it sounds like what you're telling me is that memory is basically a purse, because whatever purse a woman has, like, and John, the plural of this anecdote is in fact data, because I know loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of people who have purses. Whatever size purse you have will be filled to like 80, maybe 90% of capacity.
It's not. It's
so
not
if you carry
women.
A little tiny purse, you carry around a little bit of stuff. If you have a giant purse, you've got chicken McNugget sauce and like last year's lifesavers and whatever else in there, because you've got the room and it doesn't really, you don't really have to care to clean it out all that often because you've got the space. It's not like the space is at any sort of particular premium. Yeah. So it sounds like women. That's what Ram is doing here.
It's not just women and it's not just purses. My backpack is, it follows the same thing. It's like, it is full because that's how it works. No. And that's what macOS does with RAM, and it's gotten better and better at that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the point, Dave, is that these other Unix operating systems were kind of, that we've used in the past on our desktops at work, we're not so smart about memory. And so, and maybe not, maybe Windows as well. And mm-hmm. so there was this IT meme that you should have as much memory as possible because of the doofus OS you were using. The Mac OS is pretty smart about things.
Well, and that's going to be my question to both of you, is do you think that part of what makes this an easier question to answer now is time, in that processors aren't evolving at the speed that they used to. Programs aren't evolving to take advantage of all of that speed like they used to, because they aren't evolving at that speed anymore. So, you know, when you were getting it, when we actually lived under Moore's law, when it was 18 months, you know, Photoshop would take all of your processor, however much processor you had, you can have it.
I
remember knowing gamers who were buying a new graphics card like every 6 months because they were getting twice as much memory on the memory card. And it meant that they could play whatever they were playing. You know, like, look how good StarCraft net looks now or whatever. And I'm not dating myself at all with that reference. You know, like,
that's true, Kelly. But I think there's a reason why the new Mac Pro can put one and a half terabytes of RAM in it.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that.
Right. And there is a time and a place for that much RAM.
Simulations and other special professional software that can really use that.
But by the time, you know, I think part of it is that hardware has matured to a certain point by now. And because the hardware isn't evolving at a breakneck pace, it means that the software can be optimized to do that stuff. You know, it's sort of like we've briefly mentioned about iOS a couple of times, how they talked about, you know, the new hardware every year needs to be able to do at least what the old hardware did at the same speed, but it takes a lot less effort and cycles and power for the new hardware to do what last year's hardware did exactly the same. So they just continue to optimize.
That said, Kelly, I bought my Mac Pro in 2014 with 16 gig of RAM. It's all I could afford. I would have liked to have more. Probably didn't need it. But I'll tell you, you can put 32 gig of RAM in a Mac Mini. And if I buy a new Mac Mini to replace the Mac Pro, it's going to have 32.
Sure.
Just because I want it.
So there's a difference here, though. Like, we are talking about specific reasons for having that RAM. And if you know why you need more, great, then get it. But if for everyone out there that was just wondering, like, when I'm buying my computer, which, and we get this question all the time, do I need 8, you know, or is 8 enough, or do I need to pay extra and get 16? The answer is you do not.
Well, you never know what Apple's going to do. You know, there could be some technological thing on their technology roadmap where they make a big jump and say, you know, all right, it's time. We're going to implement this feature that we've been wanting to do for years. Oh, and guess what? It requires a minimum of 16 gig RAM. You never know.
No, you don't know. I think you would run into more issues with a processor than you would with RAM in that regard. But also, you know, I'm a big fan of not making fear-based decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think you buy the computer today that you need today. And yes, should it be able to last you several years? Yes. And will 8 gigs of RAM last you several years? Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I think
time marches on.
Will march on, and you'll replace it at some point.
And there was a time when we put
John
a megabyte of RAM in our our Power Mac G3, we had 256 megabytes of RAM. Time marches on.
Oh, absolutely. But what I think is that before Apple makes 16 gig of RAM a requirement, you're not going to be able to buy an 8 gig machine.
Right.
I think that's what's going to happen. Computers that are capable of running 64-bit applications have been what Apple's been releasing for a really long time. And so now they've just finally got the software to catch up to. You can only run 64-bit now. So, you know, we're talking about the march of progress. Like, this is one of those things. And so I think that's I think when the entry-level machine becomes a 16-gig machine, and we've been there for a product release cycle or two, then they'll say, yeah, guess what? Everything has to be 16 now. But I don't think it'll be before that, because I feel like Apple knows how bad that would look to leave people in the lurch that way. So yes, when they make that requirement, there will be people who complain, but they are going to be people who are running something that, you know, we're all going to be surprised would even install a reasonably recent version of the operating system that would be up against that requirement anyway.
Yeah, so. Apple's been pretty consistent about that. They've always allowed macOS to run on about a 5-year-old machine.
Yeah.
The window's been pretty generous.
Exactly. And that's why I think, yes, time will march on and there will become a point when somebody finds this discussion on the internet and laughs at it. But for right now, it's pretty good. And, you know, for practical day-to-day machine use, you should be able to do that. And if you violently agree or violently disagree, you can let us know by emailing observations@macobserver.com. You can talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can also leave comments in the show notes. I feel like 8 is enough. I think that's what I've got in my machine. I'm pretty sure I didn't pay for 16, and it seems to do pretty well for me for the most part. So,
and
anyway,
you're doing more than the average person too.
Yes, I do. This is but one of the things that I do with my computer that is a lot more than most people are doing with them. We were talking a little bit about software, and John, you had an article that you found very inspirational this morning, talking about Catalina.
The lead for Particle Debris this week will be an article by Daniel Arundel-Jur at Apple Insider. macOS Catalina 10.15 is what Apple promised the Mac could be and is a crucial upgrade. This looks like about a 10,000-word article from my estimation, and it is the scope and the depth is breathtaking. It is everything you ever wanted to know about Apple's strategy, everything you ever wanted to know about what Catalina is and what it does. It encapsulates all the features to the point where you're just overwhelmed by what Catalina can do and what macOS can do, as a matter of fact. The changes that Apple has been instantiating in macOS along over the years to lay the groundwork for the next version, the under-the-hood architecture improvements, the security, gradual security improvements. I highly recommend this article. You'll be overwhelmed at first, and it's probably going to take me to
get a cup of coffee.
It's a roadmap for me for my exploration of Catalina for the next year. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. I highly recommend it.
It was a really interesting article. And honestly, even before I get to the rest of it, which is actually about Catalina itself, this isn't a review. So for people who are thinking like this is just a review of what Catalina looks like that's totally not what you're getting. And in fact, that's part of what was very interesting to me reading this article right at the top was the historical context, basically, yes, of like where Catalina fits in the entire timeline. So, And with the very first sentence of the section, he says, with the release of macOS 10.15 Catalina, Apple's desktop macOS 10 platform is now 18 years old, the same age as the classic macOS when it was officially retired in 2002.
Wow.
Oh, wait.
Oh, that's a really...
But Dave, there's more. Yet.
Okay.
Sit with that for a second. Yet, rather than coasting off to sleep around version 7, today's modern macOS is on its 16th major version. And then it talks about the rest of
it. Answers the question about why do we need to have these upgrades each year? Why can't we just settle in and be done with it after 18 years and leave it the way it is? It answers that question, and it addresses all that Apple's doing and planning for.
Well, so that's really interesting because...
The planning and the development of Catalina has been amazing.
When you go back to where we are now, this Catalina is a major change, mm-hmm. evolution of Mac OS. I mean, it's certainly when you launch it, it's like, oh, it looks the same, feels the same. And for a lot of people, that will be the case. And that's actually a really good thing.
Oh, yes. Right?
But there are deceptive. Many people. Yeah, there are many people who will experience some issues, you know, with this, or have already dealt with the issues they would have experienced, like, you know, migrating away from old apps they use that weren't made up to date and, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
But the whole Project Catalyst thing, which, yes, it's got its issues, but it exists. It's here. And the fact that it is now available for the general public to use, aka third party developers, like, it will get better because developers will demand it. And Apple thus far in recent years has been pretty attentive to developers. We can of course find examples where they have not, but in fact, I just got a text from a developer this morning that was like, hey, do you know how to get in touch with anybody there? They won't do what we want. It's like, yeah, this is kind of how it goes. But by and large, you know, they know the value of third-party developers to their ecosystem, and they clearly see the value in Project Catalyst, you know, allowing iOS developers to migrate and expand their apps into the Mac. I think that's probably the right way to think about that. Mm-hmm. That's huge to me.
Yeah.
And it's all there under the hood. So, yeah, this is, you know, John, you were talking about when Apple does major shifts, we were talking about it in the context of them needing RAM. Well, you know, Project Catalyst and Mojave was really the first place we saw this, was that major shift, right? Because Mojave wouldn't run on anything that couldn't run Metal, which is Apple's APIs for newer graphics cards, mm-hmm. Because that's how all iOS apps are built. They are all built on Metal. Not all Mac apps were, and not all Macs, even Macs that were still in service and perhaps even are still in service, can run Metal.
Right.
So therefore, you know, but Apple hasn't released a machine without Metal in a long time. It did hit a bunch of us because we had machines that were 10 years old, and those were the first wave of machines that could last 10 years. So will there be someone that buys a machine today that 10 years from now is saying, whoa, you know, now I can't run, you know, macOS 10.25 or whatever we're at because, you know, there's this completely new capability. It probably isn't going to be RAM, right? It, mm-hmm. it would probably be something else, like, you know, in this case, the graphics card, or maybe something with the CPU. Maybe CPUs will all be ARM-based and not, you know, right. or A-based, I should say, and not Intel, right? Okay, fine, no problem. Like that kind of thing, yes, I think will happen. But, you know, Apple knew that this Project Catalyst was coming. They knew that they needed to have Macs with Metal support. And so I think that was part of why they waited, was to get enough of those in the market so that people weren't like, oh, this sucks, I can't run it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, it's this is the benefit of a company that builds both the hardware and the software, right?
Yeah.
So
here, one of the things you get from this article is the intelligence Apple has applied to the step-by-step migration, this transparency, consent, and control process of ever more locking down your operating system, maybe your only operating system, putting the user in charge of every little thing about, can this app read my disk? Can this app use my camera? The privacy and security settings have been becoming more and more sophisticated and more secure. And yet, just as easy to use and just as logical and just as pleasant without being obtrusive or annoying. So this is really cool.
Yeah. And like looking at how this fits into some of the other stuff, you know, there's a little bit of a history lesson about the big cat era of OS X when everything was a paid upgrade, you know, gather around kids. It's story time. In the olden days, when Apple would release a new version of macOS, it was $129, and you had to go to a place that would give you a disk in order for you to get your hands on it. That used to be a thing, an honest thing.
Yeah.
I have a non-zero number of those disks somewhere in a file. But that used to be the only way that you could do it, and it was $129 a whack. And that's one of the things he points out in this article. If you bought a new Mac in 2012, you've been offered 7 major annual updates for free software Apple would once have charged over $900 for when Mac software engineering had to support itself rather than being subsidized by the iPhone.
Well, that's because Apple knows if people have to pay for their upgrades, they won't do it. But in the current environment, that's a security issue. The only way to deal with security is to make updates almost no-brainer.
Well, that too. But I think just putting those two things side by side, you know, if you had a 7-year-old machine in 2012, that's very different than having a 7-year-old machine in 2019. And, you know, and that difference is nearly $1,000, which is the price of an 8-gig machine, right? Most of an 8-gig machine today. Digging into this article, like I said, get a cup of coffee, maybe get a snack. It'll take some time.
A couple hours.
Yeah, it'll take some time. You'll have to do it. You may have to do it in shifts. But it's definitely interesting.
You'll have a vastly greater appreciation for what Apple's doing and for what Catalina offers and how intelligent Apple has been in its migration and the effort that they're putting into Mac OS. You may have thought that Apple was neglecting the Mac hardware for a while, but this article will allay your suspicions that Apple's been neglecting the Mac OS technology.
Yeah.
It's just seriously good stuff.
It's been a really interesting read, and I think it's entirely possible that for you, like it did for John, it may end up putting you on Team Catalina.
Yep. It's going to be my Bible for the next 6 months.
And I want to hear from all of you. Has anybody upgraded to Catalina and it went well? If you upgraded and had some trouble, if you are holding off because you're waiting for the .1 release like you did with iOS, we want to hear from you. You can, again, email us at observations@magobserver.com, and you can get a comment in the show notes. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Dave, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks. I hope my hotel Wi-Fi made me at least not entirely unintelligible. So thanks for having me.
Yes. I don't know how much the Wi-Fi contributed, but yes, you ended up sounding mostly intelligible.
That's good.
John, thanks so much for coming by.
It was nice to be here. Thanks.
Glad to have you both. As always, I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.